Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from actually my home in Alexandria, Virginia. Normally, I report out of Washington, but the Center for American Progress is closed this week because, well, it is the second to last day of the year, the penultimate day of the year, actually, December 30th. And in fact, the very last show that I will give in 2015. It's actually the last radio show I'm going to give for about 3 months because, as most of you know, I'm headed off to Richmond. I have been elected a delegate to represent Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax in the Virginia House of Delegates. I will be a state representative, and I'm excited about going down there and starting to put my efforts where my mouth is. I've been on talk radio now for, 12 and a half years. And it's time that I take all the things that I care about and try to implement them as a Virginia state legislator. So everyone, please wish me well. You can still find me, though. Tweet at me at Mark Levine Talk or follow me on my website, marklevinetalk.com. Or you can also go to markfordelegate.com and check out what I'm doing politically. And don't worry, I will be back. Leslie will fill in for me for the next 3 months, but I will be back the first Monday in April. So it's just a little sabbatical, but I promise you I'll be back and I'll let you know the inside scoop on how state government works. But meanwhile, we've got a national election. In fact, by the time I get back on air, probably the Republican race may well be decided. I don't know. It seems to be going in all kinds of directions. We've got, of course, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada in February. Then Super Tuesday, where my home state of Virginia and 20 or so other states, I don't know, some massive number, all vote. By the time I come back in air in April, maybe we'll know who the Republican nominee is. The front runner is Donald Trump, which if I told you that 3 months ago, you'd think I was crazy. And indeed, I still think I'm crazy to say such a thing. But as my guest, Dr. Robert Shapiro, who's the chairman of Sonicon, an economic advisory firm, is about to point out, this is not as crazy as we might think. Economic unrest is causing a lot of anger among both Republicans and Democrats, and it's this unrest that's causing the very unusual candidacy of Donald Trump to come to the fore. Now, Dr. Shapiro has been on before. He's an internationally known economist. He's advised President Bill Clinton, Vice President Al Gore, British Prime Ministers Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, and even Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So this is the guy we want to try to explain what's going on. Dr. Shapiro, welcome to the show.
Pleasure. It's my pleasure to be here. And good luck in
Richmond.
Office. That's great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going down with my white horse and my steed, and I'm going to land on my unicorn and slay some windmills. So a quixotic quest, to be sure. I wanted to ask you this. You point out in your article called Will the GOP Break Up? That what we haven't talked about, we do talk about Donald Trump. We talk about all his lies and how he hates Muslims and Mexicans and women and says ridiculous things. And okay. But what you think undergirds all this, what I find so interesting, is the stuff that we don't talk about. It actually is the same economic inequality that fed the Occupy movement that's pushing Bernie Sanders. You think that same inequality is why Donald Trump has so much support, even though he's a billionaire. Explain how this happens.
Well, the fact is that if you look at what happened to people's incomes as they aged, that is, what happened to the income of someone who was 30 in 2000 and 35 this year, and 45 this year, rather, as they aged over those 15 years. We looked at what happened to people's incomes as they aged. And we found, first of all, that across every demographic group, households headed by men or by women, by whites or Hispanics or African Americans, by those with college degrees, those with high school diplomas, those without any degree or diploma. Through the 80s and 90s, they made pretty good progress. Yes, the college-educated made greater progress than high school-educated. And interestingly enough, African Americans made a little more progress, particularly in the 90s, than whites. And women made a little more progress in the 1990s than men. And all that stopped around 2002. And all that strong progress across groups just ended. And we entered a period of either stagnating incomes or very slowly rising incomes for college graduates, or for those without college degrees, substantial decline in people's incomes. That is, people...
Now, meanwhile, those at the top did much better, became much richer.
Yes. Those at the top became much richer. But what
it's all about the time of the George Bush tax cuts when this sort of divergence starts happening.
Well, look, this is... we had had big tax cuts in the 80s, and then we had tax increases in the 90s, and they both did particularly well. I think this is a period... See, we're looking here not at post-tax income, but at pre-tax income. Now, the tax cuts that George Bush passed exacerbated this problem. But
This was a problem even before the George Bush tax cuts, which made things worse.
Well, this was a real structural economic problem. Not a problem of policy, but a problem of the way the economy was operating.
Is this globalization, basically people getting jobs and things, manufacturing jobs in Mexico and Thailand and China and losing American jobs? Is that what it is?
Though not so much the outsourcing aspect of it, but rather that globalization intensifies competition. And when competition becomes more intense, it's harder for companies to raise prices. That's why inflation has been so low throughout this period. But what businesses found was certain of their costs kept on going up, health care for employees, pension costs for employees, energy costs. And the intense competition that's driven by globalization made it very hard for them to pass on those higher costs in higher prices, and so they cut wages and jobs instead. Now, in addition, and this is, I think, what you're getting at with respect to inequality, in addition, the capital markets said, we expect higher returns from businesses, so profits went up. And more American industries became oligopolized, and that allowed them to increase.
You're saying less competition, smaller. They merged
less
together, so there were fewer companies fighting each
That's
other.
Correct. So all of these. So what you had was two different phenomena. One is that the rich are getting much richer, and they're paying less taxes on it. But apart from that, you have a slowdown or reversal in income progress that is being driven by globalization and is being driven by technology. By the fact
Now, I'm a political guy, as you know, obviously.
Yes.
What could Congress or the president or them combined do or have done to stop this kind of systemic economic trend?
Well, I think there are a number of things they could have done. If you look at the 80s and 90s, when things were going pretty well for most people in terms of income gains, but when inequality was also increasing. So that shows you that period is an example of a period in which everyone's incomes are rising, but the incomes at the very top are rising even faster. So you have growing inequality. This period is a period in which only the incomes of those at the top are growing at healthy rates, and many other people's incomes are actually declining, and so that increases
inequality. Okay, well, let's go back to the presidential race. I'm sorry, real quick. What could have been done to affect that?
One thing that could have been done was much stronger public investment in education, in basic research and development.
Got it.
In transportation and communication systems. We had strong public investment through the 80s and the 90s, and then we stopped.
Okay. And that's something that certainly Obama wanted and Congress didn't comply with. So let's get back to the politics of it here, because I get the support for Bernie Sanders. I understand people complaining, asking to raise minimum wage. The Occupy movement makes perfect sense to me. Maybe not some of their tactics, but certainly their goals. I understand I'm a progressive. So obviously, progressive wish to make this country a place where everyone can achieve the American dream. I get that. The conservatives take this same economic dispossession, this same lack of increase in wages, this same inequality and inability to participate in the American dream. And instead of blaming the plutocrat, the Donald Trump, the billionaire, the guy who's profited off the backs of working people, they run to support him while he attacks fellow working people, Mexicans and Muslims. And I'm surprised he hasn't gone after unions yet. He probably will. What's the dynamic here? Are they just ignorant or explain this to me?
No, actually not at all. You know, the Trump support is centered among white males who without college degrees. And these are the people.
Working class people, right?
Pardon me?
The same that would join unions if they were progressives.
Yes. And these are the people who have been hit hardest by these dynamics, whose incomes have gone down the most, both by globalization and by the spread of advanced technologies throughout workplaces.
And they're the ones who, if we had Medicaid expansion, for example, would be dramatically improved by, dare I say, Obamacare, by the Affordable Care Act, because they would have their health care costs, instead of going through the roof, would be paid for, would be subsidized. And yet these are the same people opposing, quote, Obamacare, unquote. Are they just ill-informed? Help me.
Well, here, what they're doing is Trump's explanation that the problem is government coddling immigrants and government coddling women makes sense to them because they see immigrants and women as taking their jobs. Mm-hmm. And so it's a plausible explanation. And, you know, even though I think there are some similarities between the view of some Sanders supporters and Trump supporters in the sense of, hey, there's something really wrong with what's happened to incomes, and we're angry about it. Sanders supporters tend to be not the people affected by it directly, but rather people who are concerned about it and less affected by it, which is to say college-educated people.
So college-educated people who actually would profit from the income inequality and, you know, do better at the rich of the rich are, in Roosevelt Kennedy style, looking out for those people who are lesser well-off, while the people who are lesser well-off are saying, don't help us, don't give us any government benefits, it's the Mexicans' fault. I got to take a break, Robert. But when I come back, to me, this is an age-old thing. It takes me back to the 1930s. It takes me back to some anti-union sentiment. The idea that you sort of separate and divide the working class and it one against another. But I want to get your response to that. I do have to take a break. We'll be right back right after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Robert Shapiro. He's an internationally recognized economist who has worked for everyone from President Bill Clinton to Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, and Barack Obama. Robert, we were talking about this interesting Donald Trump phenomenon and the fact that it seems to be the economically disenfranchised voters, the working class, the people who are struggling the most, that support the Donald the most. Why do they go to a billionaire if their concern is working class wages?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is that they're very angry at the government, and they're angry at the government for good reason. The government has failed to continue to ensure that if you work hard and play by the rules, you'll get ahead. And in their view, this is something that has occurred under both parties. It occurred under Bush. It occurred, they're very angry at Bush. They're really not strong partisans, the supporters of...
Is this the Ross Perot Trump supporters or the Reagan Democrats? Is this the same people?
I think there's some overlap, but it's not really the same people because most of those people are now retired, right?
The same class of people, I guess. They're culturally conservative, white males mostly, and maybe the ones who tend to have guns or live in rural areas who are suffering, but they don't want to go to Democrats because Democrats are seen as the party of old blacks and immigrants and gay people and women and people like that.
Part of it, but they're probably closer to the Perot voters.
Okay.
But now there's just more of them. The Perot voters were mainly characterized by their distrust of all institutions, their view that all large institutions had failed and that there were technological fixes you could fix, or technical fixes, you could fix everything, and the reason government didn't was it's corrupt. You know, Donald Trump doesn't look like a big business guy to most people. He looks like an individual entrepreneur. And he expresses...
Huh. Even though he owns I don't know how many hotels and businesses and is literally a multi-billionaire, he's just mom and pop with the shop? Really?
He looks like a kind of lone figure who made it.
Maybe it's his bad haircut. Maybe that gets him votes.
Not like, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, right? Or the head of GE. He doesn't look like that. You know, he doesn't look like, you know, where Carly Fiorini does, for example. She was head of Hewlett Packard. She looks like part of the problem, and she didn't catch on. The problem here is, from these people's perspective, is big institutions have failed them, and not just big government.
Robert, I've taken another break. We'll get to other institutions in a second. I have to say, though, I think that part of the problem is just there's a natural prejudice among a certain class of Americans, and the fact that Donald Trump is willing to openly express the prejudice that a lot of people only say in private, I don't know, reminds me of the 1930s. Blame someone else for the nation's problems. But I want to hear from you on that when we come back. I will be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is the internationally renowned economist, Dr. Robert Shapiro, who has been so supportive in the back rooms for Democrats like Hillary and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. We're talking about the Donald Trump phenomenon, the supporters who are economically disenfranchised but are pulling their weight for a billionaire who seems to address their concerns. Robert, before the break, you were telling me that they're not just mad at government. They're also mad at other institutions. Wall Street, anybody else?
Actually, big business, Wall Street, big labor, big organizations generally. They think that all elites are corrupt.
And that's also, they're mad at immigrants. A lot of them are racist. A lot of them are worried about Muslims. Some of them are worried about women in the workforce. They kind of hate everybody. Right. It sounds a little bit like the Know Nothing Party, the 1850s.
Well, am I being too unfair? Rather than saying they hate everybody, let's just say these are people who are really angry. And they're really angry because their lives have deteriorated.
Look, right, and they don't know who to blame.
Be sympathetic to these people because they are bearing the largest, these people have borne the largest brunt of what's happened economically in this country for the last 15 years.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. They are, we need to be empathetic.
Those without college degrees.
Right. So you're right. They're struggling the most. They're the ones who are bearing the weight of high health care costs because we don't have Medicaid expansion. Their wages going down
because
minimum wage hasn't increased. The cost of going to college has gone up, so it's harder for them. But here's what I understand. So liberals, Democrats, progressives, we support Medicaid expansion. We support making college cheaper. We support raising the minimum wage. We're generally opposed to some of these trade deals that undercut American labor. We support unions who would increase wages. We support paid family medical leave. All these things would help these people a lot, right?
Yeah.
Why aren't they supporting
us? The interesting thing here is that Donald Trump is the only one of the Republican candidates who doesn't want to touch Social Security or Medicare. And that's because these are his voters. That's exactly why.
Rubio would cut Medicare and Social Security?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They didn't talk about it very much. But Donald
Rubio,
Trump is... But do you think they noticed that? I mean, I just don't know that Joe, angry Donald Trump supporter, has noticed his views on Social Security and Medicare. Am I wrong?
Well, he objected to all calls at not the last debate, which I think was all foreign policy, but the one before that, he said, wait a minute, I'm not going to privatize Social Security. We need to leave Social Security alone. And I imagine his voters heard that. I don't know. But look, the other...
How do we get these voters into our party? How does Hillary Clinton attract these voters? Bernie Sanders appears to be attracting some of them. But let's say Hillary Clinton's a nominee. You've advised her in the past. What would you say to her to reach out to these Donald Trump supporters?
Well, I think the most important thing for her to do as the nominee is to put forth a credible program to get incomes rising again. And this has been her main theme for the last 2 months, is the problem with incomes.
But the Donald Trump supporters won't believe her, right? Because, I don't know, maybe because she's a woman or she's the establishment or she's
Donald
a Democrat.
Is nominated,
she's a liberal. Are they going to be attuned to her message?
It depends whether Donald's the Republican nominee. You know, the elections are always choices, and so it depends who they're choosing between. And,
so you actually think Donald Trump might be a stronger Republican nominee against Hillary than an establishment candidate like Marco Rubio? Really?
Well, I actually think that the Republicans are in deep trouble no matter who their nominee is, and that's because the party is fundamentally divided. There is a... divided between the new right-wing populace, represented certainly by Trump and also to some extent by Cruz, versus the establishment conservatives. And they're represented now by Rubio and by Bush and Christie. But the interesting thing is, because it looks like the real right wing, for the first time, will have the greatest impact on who the nominee is, everybody has shifted to the right. It has shifted all the establishment candidates to the right. And
Help me out with this. This is what I don't understand. And part of it maybe is the lack of good words to describe. Right and left are approximations. And in essence, they're just terms that have no meaning. I mean, right, left, they don't really mean anything.
Not by themselves.
It seems to me that the Donald Trump supporters, or at least the disaffected white men who are being harmed economically, would be most helped by Hillary Clinton's or Bernie Sanders' agenda. I mean, it would literally put dollars in their pockets if they believed that Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders would go through on their agenda. Am I right?
Yes, and if they believe that the government could, that the government or those in the political establishment, which certainly covers both Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders, would actually deliver. They don't. They don't.
But Roosevelt delivered. Lyndon Johnson, for all his faults, delivered on the war on poverty. Why don't they look? Are they mad at Obama because they think Obama is somehow his fault that their income's continuing to go down? They don't blame the Republican Congress. They blame Obama.
Yeah, absolutely. They blame Obama and they blame the Republican Congress. They blame both. They are not real partisans. That's one of the most interesting developments of this year. And that means, incidentally, that if Rubio manages to defeat Trump and Cruz, and you've got an establishment candidate at the top, I think most of these voters will sit out the election.
Interesting. So you're basically saying Hillary Clinton wins either way, because if Rubio wins, they sit out the election. And if Donald Trump or Ted Cruz wins, they vote for Cruz or Trump, but the traditional right wing, or at least the moderate Republicans, the extent they exist, would be so upset by the attacks on Mexicans and women and so forth that they might line up with Hillary Clinton.
There is one of the basic laws of politics is that a united party always beats a divided party. And look, the Democrats were on the losing version of this for six elections. The Democrats divided very severely starting in 68, triggered by the Vietnam War and by civil rights. They remained divided until Bill Clinton. And the only one who won was Carter for one term, when Nixon had been impeached and Ford had pardoned him.
Can Bernie Sanders divide the Democratic Party?
Pardon me?
Can Bernie Sanders divide the Democratic Party?
Well, I don't think an individual can. It is interesting that's an interesting question, and that is, will this division, this kind of division, also infect the Democratic Party? And I think that if Mrs. Clinton is nominated, as I expect, and if she wins, as I hope, but if she is unable to make progress in restoring income growth, in 2020 we could see a very similar division in the Democratic Party.
Interesting. I got to take one last break, Robert. When we come back, I want you to pretend that I'm Hillary Clinton and I'm asking for your advice. And my question is, how do I reach out to the disaffected voters? What do I say and what do I do in terms of policy? But also, what do I say? What do I say culturally? How do I reach out to these people who maybe President Obama famously disregarded when he said they cling to their guns and their Bible? What culturally, as well as policy-wise, should Hillary Clinton do to win the November election? That's my question when we come back, and we'll be right back right after this.
Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. In my last 15 minutes or so of the calendar year 2015, and then I'm going on sabbatical and going to do my best to change public policy in the state capital, Richmond, Virginia, while I will serve as a delegate in the state representative. If you want to continue to follow me, maybe check out some old shows you haven't heard before. There are 2,000 plus radio shows on my website at marklevinetalk.com and more than 500 television shows. You could watch every hour from January 1st to March 31st, and you won't miss me a bit. So please check that out. Follow follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. And hey, check out what I'm doing in the state legislature at markfordelegate.com, markfordelegate.com. Still got my best guest on, Robert Shapiro. I've asked a very difficult question by giving him time during the break to think about it. All right, Robert, I'm Hillary Clinton. I want to reach out to the disaffected Trump supporters. What policies should I support? And maybe more importantly, how do I phrase my policies so these folks actually listen to me?
Well, I think, you know, I was sitting here trying to think of what gesture she could make that would really get these voters to say, hey, I'm going to give her another look. And the only thing big enough to do that is the vice presidential selection, but I honestly can't think of anyone who would be attractive as a vice president to these voters.
How about Joe Biden?
Would
he's
make
working
a
class.
Coherent vice president for Hillary.
How about Joe Biden?
He's
working class. Could she consider having him on again?
Pardon me?
How about Joe Biden? He's working class.
He's working class, but too tied to the Obama administration and too old. If you're looking for a working class, someone who might be able to make that appeal, I think Sherrod Brown has got to be at the top of near the top of everybody's list for vice president, both because he's working class, because he comes from the left side of the party that unites the party, and because he's the senator from Ohio, and the fact is the Republicans have no chance of winning without Ohio. He's a strong choice, and he might be someone who could appeal to at least some of these voters.
Well, what if she were to spend some time in Appalachia? That borders Virginia, it borders Ohio, and actually see her in some tiny town talking with 10 people in around a closed factory, and show that culturally she's going to reach out to them and not just to people in the big cities.
Well, I honestly don't know. You know, I'm an economist and not a political operative. I think what she needs to concentrate on is having an administration which improves the lives of working class people, whether they're working class people who today support Donald Trump or working class people who today support Bernie Sanders or who support her. And
okay, but some of the things she proposes, for example, raising the minimum wage. In fact, Bernie Sanders would raise it even more. She talks about $12 an hour. He talks about $15 an hour. Donald Trump opposes raising the minimum wage.
Yes, he does.
Why wouldn't this group of voters be more attuned, I guess, to Bernie Sanders first, Hillary Clinton second, and Donald Trump third?
Well, look, I don't think they're going to be attuned to these voters. That is, Donald Trump's voters are not going to be listening to either Hillary or Bernie in this period. And the issue is not getting their votes. I think the issue is turning their view of her and government around by succeeding as president. And the minimum wage is a piece of that. I think more important would be an effort to provide no-cost access for any adult, whether it's a white working-class male or a middle-aged Hispanic woman, no-cost access to retraining in information and Internet-based technologies by providing grants to the community colleges to keep their computer labs open and staffed on the evenings and on weekends for anyone to walk in and get free training.
I've seen community colleges offer these kinds of things already. Is it a problem of cost that people can't afford to do this, or is it not being?
Yes, it is cost. That is the fact is, if you're going to attract a lot of the people who would be most helped by this, you've got to reduce the barrier to getting it to zero, which is to say, make it free. And we could do that with federal grants to the community college.
I wonder about some of those that I've seen, and I don't remember whether from Bernie Sanders, or Hillary Clinton, or some other Democrat, to basically say that we'll let you go to community college, say, for free, and then once you get a job, you'll pay back of your income to the community college until they're paid off. Sort of a and if you lose your job, you don't have to pay, no student loans. And if you get a job and you're doing well, you shouldn't mind giving back. How about proposals like that?
Well, I think, look, that's aimed at a different group of the country. That is at students, at people who are getting college educations, and they're starting off with community colleges or with public colleges. And
but it would work for adults too, though, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm saying something a little more progressive than you are here.
Oh, you are. Please go ahead.
I'd say that for adults who are not going there for college, but just to build skills, that they should be able to get that training at absolutely no cost, not with a loan that is there where repayment is based on your income, or
Robert, I support you, but in this political environment where the Republicans control Congress, I mean, it sounds like a non-starter.
Well, that's going to be a problem with anything progressive, and so one of the things we need to do is we need to take back at least one house of Congress. And or it's going to be a very rough 4 years.
That's or right. We could have Hillary Clinton talk about these proposals, make clear that if she's president, she's going to push Congress for these proposals, and ask people all around the country to vote for members of Congress that support these proposals. In other words, a democratic contract for America. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a good idea. I think that a lot of Republicans are going to have a lot of difficulty in the 2016 election, and it's because of the split in the Republican Party, that if you have someone like Trump or Cruz at the top of the ticket who is carrying out a anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-woman, anti-science agenda, that Republican office holders, senators, members of the House, and members of state legislators, for that matter, are going to be in a bind. Either they support the policies of the nominee, in which case they're in danger of alienating moderate conservatives, which include conservative millennials, and it includes, in particular, suburban women.
I got it. And if they don't, they alienate the Cruz supporters, so they lose. They lose either way. At the end of the day, though, and we only got about a minute left. My question is, what about this cultural divide? It seems to be Donald Trump is exacerbating tensions in terms of being anti-immigrant or racist or against gay people or women or whomever is these cultural wars that Pat Buchanan talked about 20 years ago. They still seem to continue, and Donald Trump seems to be using them to his advantage. I don't see how Hillary Clinton can dissipate that unless she turns against the very people she'll never.
Neither do I. Look, I think that to some extent, these kinds of cultural views they're present in every society. Some of the most virulent anti-Muslim laws in recent years were passed in Denmark, which is, and the Netherlands. The Netherlands in particular, considered very progressive places. So this is a part of every society.
Robert Spiro, I always appreciate when you come here. Robert Spiro's website is www.sonecon, that's S-O-N-E-C-O-N, sonecon.com. His Twitter handle is at Rob Shapiro, R-O-B-S-H-A-P-I-R-O. Dr. Rob Shapiro, thank you for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
My pleasure, this is Mark and good luck in the House of
Dean, thank you. Thank you. I just want to say goodbye to everyone. Have a very happy new year. Enjoy listening to Leslie in the new year. And come Monday, April 4th, I'll be right back falling with energy, filled with energy, talking about whoever the nominees are in the presidential race and giving you my insights from what I've done. And again, follow me on my website, marklevinetalk.com, or my political website, markfordelegate.com, and I'll talk to you in the new year.